Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Newsmakers Podcast. This is Kyle Gargaro, Editorial Director of the News. We wanted to have a discussion about the decarbonization trend in the HVAC industry. To do that, we're fortunate enough to get Mark Lessens, Johnson Controls Senior Director of Sustainability and Regulatory Affairs, to be a guest. Thanks for joining us today, Mark.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kyle.
Let's just, I guess, start off by getting on the same page by telling folks what the decarbonization trend in HVAC is. And I guess I was kind of curious if we can use decarbonization and electrification interchangeably, or kind of talk me through that a little bit.
Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good question, and something that we run into pretty often when we talk about electrification and decarbonization. I would say personally, I like to separate the two out, and I can dive into that in a moment here. But ultimately, you know, that they were really, I'd say, moving toward the same. You know, it's a means to the same end. And so when we talk about decarbonization, what that means to me really is we're looking for any way possible to remove carbon from the processes that we, you know, do during our daily lives, whether that's heating and cooling our buildings, or transportation, industry, et cetera. Anything that we can do to, you know, again, remove carbon from that operation is decarbonization. Electrification is a little bit more acute. Electrification really implies taking a look at specific end uses, again, within a building or the transportation sector, industry, et cetera, and looking for those combustion processes that rely on fossil fuels and shifting over to electricity as an end use. And so, you know, if we kind of put the two together and we talk about building decarbonization, we really often mean or imply that many to all of the end uses need to be electrified in order to fully decarbonize a building. But it is really, one is part of the other, I suppose.
Okay, no, that's a good point. I guess we'll stick with decarbonization then for this conversation, so we're on the same page. And when we're talking about this, it's just for, we're doing it for the environment. Is that the main reason you're seeing this trend take off?
That's certainly the largest portion of this trend. I mean, contributed to this trend. There's obviously been a huge movement globally and within the North America and the United States as well to address climate change. And addressing climate change means finding all the sources of greenhouse gas emissions that we can and reducing them pretty aggressively, arguably roughly about 50% by 2030 and net zero by 2050, really is are the benchmarks for what the science says we need to do in order to avert the worst effects of climate change. And so decarbonization then gets prioritized as a way to contribute to that. I'd say though, it's been really interesting, especially in light of current events right now with the war in Ukraine and the way that Russia certainly is, arguably weaponizing the use of their energy resources, many of them fossil fuels. And so it's been interesting to watch now. There's an additional imperative that gets weaved into decarbonization, and that's energy security. The more that we can do to reduce our reliance on globally traded commodities in order to power and energize our economies, the more energy secure we can become. I'd say in light of current events, there really is become this huge interconnection between decarbonization and energy security, and really trying to think through ways that we can address both simultaneously.
And you obviously saw this trend coming probably a long time before me, or even maybe some of our contractors. When did it kind of first get on your radar?
Yeah, it's, you know, a lot of people would point to the city of Berkeley banning the use of natural gas hookups in new construction. I believe they did that in June or July of 2019 was when that ordinance passed. That was when, I think that really got on everybody's radar, but certainly this has been a trend that's been going on for quite some time. Decarbonization broadly has been something that's been addressed, since the, I would say the 90s, when climate change really started to become, come to the forefront. But electrification and really thinking through things like beneficial electrification as a core strategy for building decarbonization, this has been, I'd say in the middle 2000s was when we really started to see a lot of these interesting, thoughtful analyses coming out, really looking at, you know, okay, we're making a lot of improvements in energy efficiency, but at the same time, we've got these end uses in the building that are still rely on fossil fuels. At the same time, the grid is decarbonizing around us. And if we truly want to get to net zero buildings, we're going to have to find a way to decarbonize all of the energy sources, not just the electricity that we're supplying the building. And, you know, I would say that was when we really started to see some interesting analyses come out around, you know, comparing things like furnaces to heat pumps. What are the costs and carbon implications of those? And this continued drumbeat toward, you know, thinking through beneficial electrification as this potential strategy. It's also been interesting, too, in Europe. You know, this trend has been moving a bit more aggressively than it has been here. A number of member states of the European Union have already established goals and in some cases bans on boilers, which is the predominant heating system that they would use inside the building individually. So it's been going on for quite some time. Certainly, you know, but the inflection point, I suppose, maybe was 2019. And it's really taken off since then as a trend at the forefront in everybody's mind.
Okay. It's a pretty good segue because, like I said in the intro, you have sustainability and regulatory in your title. So I assume you're my guy on this. but just kind of curious how much, you know, the government is going to be involved. I see it. You mentioned things more locally and state driven. I'm kind of curious if on the federal level, you see this happening, but just kind of talk about how government is really pushing this here in the States.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say government intervention broadly is necessary to help expedite the market for decarbonization. And so there's a number of different policy tools that can be used. Well, I think it'd be hard not to talk about what the states and cities are doing, and we can get to that in a moment. If we look at what the federal government is doing and the tools that they have to try to drive this, they've certainly prioritized, certainly the Biden administration and their DOE and EPA have prioritized development in things like heat pumps and in addition to energy efficiency, really trying to drive and put pressure on, friendly competitive pressure on OEMs to really boost the performance of heat pumps in cold climates and in non-traditional applications. Really, there's been a lot of, frankly, just interest on the part of DOE. And we can see that in the types of projects that they're funding, the types of initiatives that they're doing. And I do think we'll see that come out in some of the policy tools that they have, which are coming down the pike, namely things like appliance standards for furnaces and heat pumps, which they haven't started formally publishing any kind of regulations yet on those two product categories. But so everybody expects that they will, under this administration. And I would be shocked if there wasn't a huge tie in there in the trend of electrification, decarbonization, this potential anticipated shift over to heat pumps and the increased needs that we're going to have out of heat pumps, as well as reducing our reliance on furnaces and boilers for space heat. So it's hard to say exactly what they would do or how that would weave itself into those appliance standards, but I do think from a regulatory command and control perspective, that's what we'll see. On the state and local side of things, this topic has certainly become a lot more acute as we've seen. I would say a lot of people various stakeholders within states and cities really view bans on gas hookups and new construction, and ultimately bans on the replacement of furnaces and boilers as the de facto building decarbonization strategy that we're going to need to do. And I would say that, that might ultimately be necessary, but I'd also really look at things like building performance standards or clean heat standards or other things that are going to really help, in my opinion, shift the economics from burning gas to shifting to efficient electrification as things that can really make a huge impact as well and can have a huge role to play in this whole movement to decarbonization. If I could, and to focus on building performance standards for just a moment, those building performance standards address the entire building, every end use, every part of the operation of a building, and try to get that entire building down ultimately to net zero. It places huge incentives on the use of heat pumps in place of other in place of other, you know, combustion appliances, and it will absolutely drive the market in that direction. But it does that in a way that still enables some flexibility for the building owner to figure out exactly what the right path is that they need to take in order to fully decarbonize that building.
That's a good point, because whenever you say ban, all of a sudden it feels like we're ready for a fight, right? Because some people with the liberty, so different ways to get there is kind of interesting. Is it too simplistic on the state and city level to say Democrat-run cities and states are really looking at this and Republicans aren't? Or am I speaking half-truth? Kind of break that down.
I'd say, yeah, I mean, it's... there's definitely correlation between the two. I think this isn't necessarily a Democrat Republican issue. And certainly there are a lot of Democratic areas that, you know, in parts of the country that I think we might actually be hesitant to banning the use of furnaces. But, you know, I would say, you know, it would so I'm trying to think of the best way to answer this. It's without being too political, I suppose.
Right. No, I gotcha.
This is definitely something that I think we are unfortunately seeing a little bit of a kind of a complete divergence in terms of policymaking, where we do see red states now passing what we refer to as gas bans, where they try to preempt municipalities from banning the use of natural gas. While at the same time, we're seeing a lot of blue states pursue policies to ban the use of natural gas. And so, it definitely makes things more complicated and is less than ideal from a technology transition perspective. I think from my perspective, I guess I would say it would sure be nice if we could find more of a national cohesive strategy for how are we going to decarbonize buildings in a pragmatic way.
Sure, you don't want to have to deal with 50 different rules. You'd rather deal with a rule, right? I get it. We talk about both, but obviously, you know, building owners and homeowners is who this is directly affecting. I guess maybe we'll zero in on homeowners first. I'm just thinking that people had furnaces for years and say we're gonna change. It could be a tough sell, and it might be why are you limiting my choices? I guess how do you get buy-in from the homeowner level?
So it's we've seen an interesting mix in the demographic of homeowners. And I think as more and more millennials become homeowners, as more and more this younger generation becomes homeowners, I think, we're going to see a continued openness to different ways of doing things. And there's this recognition that, burning natural gas inside of your house is contributing to climate change. And so I do think there's going to be I don't think we're going to see quite as much resistance with some of the younger generation, at least up front. I by no means does that mean they're going to immediately jump into something that doesn't make sense for them to do. But I think there's going to be a little bit more open-mindedness around, thinking through how am I actually heating my home? And is there a better way of doing this for the environment? That ultimately also aligns with kind of where, whether it's, whether it's theoretical or not, kind of where they see the broader kind of market going in terms of being able to address climate change as they see fit. There's also this plays into the contractor discussion a little bit, which I know we'll get to in a moment, but we're also seeing some pretty considerable incentives for adopting heat pumps, especially in some of those blue states that are trying to very quickly electrify and decarbonize buildings. There's also what was the other point I was going to make? There's also understanding, I think, of to a certain extent, as these heat pumps become more efficient, you can actually have a pretty significant improvement in your operating costs when you shift from a furnace to a heat pump. At least at least for a large portion of your heating season, you could be running that heat pump very efficiently and be paying quite a bit less to heat your home. So I think that's another obviously real selling point here that I think is gonna take some time to overcome because there are additional barriers to adoption, but it's coming. I think I'd be remiss too if I didn't talk a little bit about the commercial sector here. There's been a bit more buy-in in the commercial sector already when it comes to electrification-based solutions. I would say some of the first moving organizations are those that are larger corporations that might have commitments to reduce their emissions to net zero and have their own, are looking very closely at where they're getting their energy from, what their carbon footprint is, et cetera. And those are the type of companies that are coming to Johnson Controls, and we'll work with them and audit their entire, building operations, help them identify where they're, where the lowest hanging fruit is to decarbonize, and can even help them with, energy procurement to really help decarbonize their entire, their entire operations. And there's certainly been more of a recognition among those commercial building owners, and especially in these larger corporations, that if they're trying to eliminate their carbon emissions, they look at something that burns natural gas and says, I gotta stop doing that, or I gotta at least reduce it as much as I possibly can. So what are the alternatives that you have that help me get there? And so that conversation is certainly a bit more mature in the commercial space than it is in the residential space.
And I'm assuming the commercial folks are more apt to pay a little higher upfront costs if it's going to give them a reoccurring savings every month than maybe a homeowner is. Would you agree with that?
Certainly for larger commercial customers that have the ability to, that might have the ability to, accept and manage the upfront costs that would come with an electrification solution. I'd say in the light commercial space, it might be a little bit more of a challenge, but for larger commercial buildings and corporate, large corporates that might have lots of offices around the country, there's definitely, they tend to have an easier time recognizing quantifying the value of decarbonization because they know it contributes to their goals. And then also finding a way to pay for it makes it easier. It's also interesting, in that context to think about like the very large energy users that are out there where, I'm talking about like campuses or hospitals or very large heating systems that have huge boiler loads. We've seen a lot of success with those types of customers, helping them shift over to things like water to water heat pumps, where they can utilize those to do, if they do simultaneous heating and cooling with those water to water heat pumps, they're pushing COPs of like 7. So they start seeing humongous returns on investment that isn't really, a niche technology in certain applications, highly advanced, huge opportunity there, but it's hard to capture those types of efficiencies, at least today, in the residential light commercial market. So it makes that payback isn't quite as aggressive as it would be for those really large customers.
You're talking about the millennials who are obviously now becoming a big part of the workforce, and they're looking for more out of a company, looking for, companies that are social conscious. So if a company, a building is doing this, that, it might bring in a few more people that might be more interested in working for you, I suppose.
Oh, sure. I mean, that's, I would say that's a conversation that we have among our sustainability team. And I believe that, it's part of our employee recruitment strategy and retention strategy. And I expect it is among a lot of larger corporations as well. I mean, to be honest, this isn't my area of expertise, but I know, just based on things that I've seen, millennials, much more so than their predecessors, are almost demanding of their employers that they have, apply some kind of meaning to their work and even stand for something for more than just turning a profit. And so certainly, we really try to leverage our image and our vision to decarbonize buildings and utilize that in a number of different ways, including the ways that, including how we would try to attract new talent.
Obviously, mostly our audience here is HVAC contractors who are aware of the trend, but maybe not have their arms fully around it. What advice are you giving to them on how to start this process with their customers, both commercially and residentially, to kind of soften the ground for, it sounds like this is coming to a theater near you.
I think that the most important thing to do is to really really think through what the value proposition is for the customer. this is going to be a little bit of a challenge, I think, for a lot of contractors to, you know, especially when it's not mandated by regulation. I mean, let's be real. You know, 9 times out of 10, a contractor is going to come to, you know, is going to replace equipment because it's burned out. And the easiest thing to do is to replace what's already there. You know, certainly to shift, you know, if you've got a, you know, let's say take residential, if you've got a split air conditioner furnace system, the fastest, easiest thing to do is going to replace, is not going to be to install a heat pump. It's going to be to install, either just replace the air conditioning unit if that's what's necessary, replace the furnace if that's the only thing that broke, or if you got to do both, then to, you know, to put in that, you know, to replace a like for like system. I think as we're starting to see though, this, you know, these policy drivers trying to move us in this direction of electrification, I really do think the economics are going to shift, and they're already starting to today. I mentioned incentives. We're seeing right now in California and in the Northeast, thousands of dollars for installing a heat pump. Money that actually will start to could really actually, you know, make it more cost effective for that customer at even upfront in terms of upfront costs to replace, you know, to put a heat pump in if they can. And I think, you know, as we look at these trends in building decarbonization and building decarbonization policy, I do think that, you know, I would predict that the cost of heating your home with fossil fuels is going to continue to increase. And it, you know, the more that we can do to try to help customers do beneficial electrification and think through what's going to be the most effective way to prepare for today as well as in the future and reap any of those benefits that are available, that's going to be critical. And so it is, you know, again, it's a real challenge, especially right now where, say, you know, it's the middle of winter and somebody's furnace dies. You know, the customer's going to want a new furnace as quickly as possible. But if there's, you know, if there are, you know, if we can think creatively about what we might be able to do either as a temporary solution for that customer while we do the more of the work to try to get that heat pump installed, or perhaps even think through, you know, maybe go halfway. You could, you know, if install a dual fuel system so that you can, you know, heat that home as much as you possibly can with that heat pump and then just rely on the furnace for backup. There's a lot of different creative things that we can do that might not end up being that much more expensive up front for the customer and can really prepare them down the line for what's going to be necessary or how the economics might shift as we try to decarbonize buildings.
Final question for you here, Mark. What is Johnson Controls doing specifically to be a part of this trend? I guess I'm thinking more like, what kind of products are you developing and researching and introducing that are leading to this trend or being a part of it?
Yeah, so I'd say across the board, we're investing heavily in our heat pump portfolio. We do have a pretty expansive portfolio when you look across our entire enterprise, whether, you know, starting with, you know, what our residential light commercial ducted products. We also have a joint venture with Hitachi to do ductless and VRF. We make quite a bit of chillers and applied systems that can and investing heavily in applied heat pumps. So thinking chillers that can provide heating as well as cooling. And then also in the industrial refrigeration space, we make quite a bit of heat pumps and are investing quite a bit of those that would serve industry and some of those more district heating systems that I think we're going to see. And so we're, you know, so I would say across the board, we're really trying to identify where those growth vectors are going to be and what we need to invest in to make sure that we're prepared to have those necessary solutions in order to respond to this massive trend in building decarbonization. To point to one example that's been a little bit more public and, you know, a nice example about what the federal government is doing too is, you know, we're one of several OEMs that are participating in the DOE Cold Climate Heat Pump Challenge. And so in that challenge, DOE came to us and the OEMs and basically told us, you guys got to design a heat pump that meets 2.4 COP and 100% capacity at 5F, which there isn't a ducted heat pump on the market that can do that today. But, you know, we are participating in that program. We do have a proof of concept that we're working on, and so do all of our competitors. And the plan is to ultimately start commercializing products that are going to meet those specs and really start to displace a large portion of gas heating loads in cold climates. So, you know, I would say that's one of several areas where we're really just looking across the portfolio to try to figure that out. The other area too that's been pretty interesting is also in the digital solution space. It's, I suppose, a little bit more applicable to commercial buildings, but we are investing pretty heavily in digital connected solutions that are really going to help our customers manage their energy consumption, really try to optimize, which is going to be increasingly necessary as we electrify end uses. Load management and making sure that buildings are ultimately playing a role in helping to balance the grid, as well as taking advantage of cleaner and cleaner electricity when it's available, as opposed to when the building might traditionally need it, are going to be really critical factors ultimately in how we decarbonize buildings. And so those types of solutions are, you know, controls and digital are really going to be a critical part of this decarbonization story as well.
Well, Mark, thanks for kind of breaking down a pretty complex topic in the HVAC industry. You did it well, and even I could understand. So that's a win.
Well, thanks. Really appreciate the opportunity. This is something that, you know, I'm passionate about and work on every day. And, you know, anytime I get the chance to talk about heat pumps and building decarbonization, I'm always happy to do so. So thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You must be great at parties then, Mark.
Everybody loves me.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah. Thanks. You too.